Air Force brass say they want more planes and pilots. What Congress is offering is a new corps, the U.S. Space Corps. In a House hearing, Air Force Secretary Heather Wilson says she's cool to the idea because it would add complexity and cost. What exactly is the House proposing and who's behind it? For some answers, we turn to Bloomberg senior defense analyst Rob Levinson. Rob, good to have you back.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
So this U.S. Space Corps, first of all, who is behind this idea?
Yes, it's Mike Rogers, who is the chairman of the Strategic Forces Subcommittee of the House Armed Services Committee, and he's from Alabama. And of course, Huntsville, Alabama has a lot of military space activity.
Well, he must have more to the idea than helping out his district. That's always part of it. But space has become kind of an important asset, and even the Air Force brass and other military brass have said that it's going to be a contested zone. So what else does he, what would he like to see here?
Well, I think you're exactly right. You know, the importance of space has risen, and even the Secretary Heather Wilson, the new Air Force Secretary, I think her first public speech talked about emphasizing space. But I think Rogers and some others on the Hill are concerned that space, as long as most of it's stuck in the Air Force, you know, the Air Force priority is still going to be about airplanes. And they feel that by creating this separate entity whose sole responsibility is space, it will get a little bit more priority, perhaps more funding and things like that. It's just sort of a way of increasing the priority and the emphasis by the Department of Defense on space activity.
So it would be patterned after the Marine Corps, which is, in theory, part of the Navy, but kind of has a life of its own.
Right. I think that's the idea. It's not a totally separate entity. They don't want to create a new department. So just like the Marine Corps, as you say, is subsumed under the Department of the Navy, this new U.S. Space Corps would still be under the Department of the Air Force, but it would have its own chief of staff who would sit as a co-equal member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, similar to how the Commandant of the Marine Corps does.
Now, what about the Navy? What's their? Do they have a position in all of this? Because they have SPAWAR, which is a space-oriented or partially space-oriented agency.
Right. For the moment, the draft legislation is very explicit that it's only talking about taking resources from the Air Force, carving this new corps out of the Air Force, and actually says that it's not going after stuff in the Army or stuff in the Navy, or even in the intelligence community. But I would expect that if this thing became a reality, and we're not sure that it will, over time you would see, you know, pressure to move, again, all military space activity under this new corps.
And does the legislation state what this corps would actually do?
It's sort of very vague terms, but, you know, deal with preserving our constellation in space, our, you know, the satellites, intelligence collection platforms, communications platforms, and both protecting them and then assuring that perhaps, you know, we could operate, if necessary, offensively in space.
And of course, the Chinese have pointedly demonstrated their capabilities of taking out spacecraft from other spacecraft, so maybe that's a concern too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a concern that, you know, when you mentioned earlier that people view space as a contested zone, and that definitely means that there are others out there with capability to, you know, attack our assets in space, and we're worried about it.
And I guess, too, there is the issue of if we become offensive in space visibly and notably, then that kind of opens the door for other countries, Russia, China, with space assets to openly pursue their aggressive or kinetic capabilities up there.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, obviously, if we're doing stuff, they're going to react to that. And, you know, everybody's probably going to want to up their game in that environment.
We're speaking with Rob Levinson, senior defense analyst at Bloomberg. And these misgivings expressed by Heather Wilson, the Air Force Secretary, were basically budgetary and complexity, but not really strategically.
Right. I mean, I think she agrees with the priority of space. She's just thinking that, you know, creating a whole new corps is not the way to handle it. And, you know, some of that is, of course, you know, I reminded somebody earlier this morning, you know, the Air Force used to be the Army Air Corps and was carved out of the Army. And I'm sure at the time there were some generals in the Army who didn't think that was a good idea either. You know, there's sort of very parochial interests here operating as well, losing control of budget and people and resources.
Interesting, because a space corps or space type of command would be different from the other armed services in that you wouldn't have space cadets flying around and this kind of thing. It's all remote control, all done by computer, basically, except for the launches.
Right. I mean, you know, somebody asked me if there was a vision of, a bunch of space marines running around with laser guns. That's not really what, the U.S. military space people do. They sit in rooms with lots and lots of computers, and they're monitoring, a lot of satellites and sometimes changing their orbits, monitoring their health, and then overseeing the programs that will put new satellites up in orbit. That's kind of what the Space Corps will be doing.
So maybe the U.S. Cyber Command is a better model or pattern to look at than the Marine Corps.
Well, that would be, the U.S. Cyber Command is still a subordinate unified command. And there's also talk of raising that to a higher status. And then some people have talked about merging space and cyber into one corps as well, though that's not in the legislation. But, they feel that these two domains are different enough that perhaps they deserve their own sort of service. Those are ideas that have been kicked around.
And from what you've seen in the markups, what we can see of them at least so far, and what you have seen on Capitol Hill, what about the rest of the Air Force in what's going to become part of the NDAA?
Well, I mean, at least in the HASC, which has been more open, the SAS markup is pretty close. They're both finalizing things today, but Chairman Thornberry is trying to put more money in the budget, the Air Force part of that, more F-35s. He's trying to put more money in the budget than, of course, what President Trump even requested. He doesn't feel that Trump's request is enough. Now, it remains to be seen. That's in the authorization bill. What the appropriators do and what deals they cut is another story.
Now, our own Scott Massioni spoke with me just a few minutes ago saying that the fact that Mac Thornberry reduced his top line from $640 billion for 2018 down now to $631 billion, if he could get some kind of a multi-year agreement going, may signal that they're willing to trade stability for absolute spending. Is that your view?
Yeah, I think Mac Thornberry, he wants a predictable growth path and recognized perhaps that 640 was going to be tough. But like I say, that ultimate top-line number is going to be more a product, as it has been since really 2011, of real fiscal arm wrestling that goes on with the budget resolution and the appropriations committee, because they've got to balance it against the non-defense needs and against deficits, and all sorts of things come into play there that have more fiscal drivers. But Mac Thornberry and his counterpart in the Senate, John McCain, they started with that 640 number, and it remains to be seen what the Senate is going to do. But they're going to have to come off of that number somewhat. 640 is probably not very realistic.
And do we know how much of that is overseas contingency operations funds, and how would that compare to what's been going on for the past couple of years?
Well, I think in Thornberry's latest proposal, his number in what he calls the base budget is 621, and then $10 billion of it will be this game that they've played for a while. It'll be the OCO for base. It's in the overseas contingency operations, but it's really to service base requirements. There's been a lot of games played with the OCO because it's not covered by the budget caps from the Budget Control Act. And so, yeah, he's going to throw some more money into OCO, and that would probably boost the OCO request. But again, that doesn't count against the caps, so he can get away with some of that perhaps and not, make the budget committees upset.
Well, it sounds like they're not moving the top line that much, but just moving the dividing line.
Well, right. I mean, this is game that has been played. Some people have estimated that as much as close to half of what's called OCO, Overseas Contingency Operation, is really base requirements. But again, because of the rules on the budget caps, the military has shoved a bunch of stuff in there. It's a debatable point, but certainly Thornberry's at least acknowledging $10 billion of it that he plans is, in fact, for base requirements.
Rob Levinson is senior defense analyst at Bloomberg. Thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Tom.
Find a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.